Committee on General Government, and just so I respond to the crack about the move to the right, I will comment that, yeah, politicians are shifty. We're allowed to move anywhere we want. But the Capitol crud has killed so many of my friends the last few weeks. It's just ridiculous. Now, I had about 103.8-degree fever, which I hear is pretty high, and have been taking some antibiotic that the doctor gave me for the last 5 days. So I'm more stable. I'm very frustrated. My wife, who's a Methodist minister in real life, works in my office. She's on a leave of absence. She went to Mississippi to do her niece's wedding today. And she is literally so sick she won't get to do the wedding. She won't be able to get on a plane to come back to Oregon. This capital is a dangerous place to work. That's all I can say. I'm very frustrated right now.
I didn't move on.
But anyway, I am so glad that Senator Walker has joined us. Because we're going to do a very quick... Oh, we've got Senator Stark.
And you're... I take it you're protecting the rest.
I was pointing out that I didn't want to sit near anybody and give them the leftovers of the capital crud that I have.
Oh, good. I haven't had it yet, so...
I'm in pretty good shape compared to what I was over the weekend. Anyway, I'm going to ask staff if they'll... get us started. I'm going to open a hearing and a work session on HCR 5. Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. House Concurrent Resolution 5 commemorates the 100th anniversary of Gresham and designates February 11th as the City of Gresham Day. This measure has no revenue and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith.
And we have... are hobbling.
Senator, no, wait a minute. You just had to.
They were my friends.
Last time Senator George and I were talking to one another, he had the same crud as I did. He talked about driving home the day before, and he said to me, you know, he felt so bad, he felt he shouldn't be driving. Now he walks in with crutches.
This is what's coming.
Oh, well.
Oh, boy.
But he's doing the right thing by isolating himself from the rest of us, too. You remember, yeah. I was very careful to do that.
Yeah.
But there's no incubation time. You're on your own.
I'm on the upswing. I'm in a lot better shape than I was this weekend, I'll tell you. Anyway, Senator Montes Anderson, would you come? And we're going to have a very fast hearing here, and then we'll get on to the rest of the work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for hearing House Concurrent Resolution 5. Gresham did turn 100 years old on February 11th. We're only, 11 days past, but we did actually celebrate its birthday over in the House on the very day of February 11th. Gresham is Oregon's fourth largest city. I was about one years old when we moved to Gresham, and it had a population of less than 2,000, and it now has a population of 100,000. So I have seen a huge, huge change. When I was 8 years old, that was a time when kids were allowed to work, and I would work every summer in the berry fields, and now it is just a metropolis with labor laws in effect, big time. I won't go read the resolution. I just want you to know that Gresham is a thriving metropolis. I love it dearly. I'm so honored and proud to represent Gresham, and I would be honored if you would pass this resolution in celebration of Gresham becoming a city in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Any questions? Yes.
I'd like to make a comment. I think Gresham is very fortunate to have a senator like Lori Bones Anderson.
Thank you.
And also, in reading the resolution, Senator, I noticed that politics was alive and well back in the beginning of your city, because they were figuring out exactly how to get the Postmaster General to approve the post office, and his name was Gresham. So that's pretty right. clever stuff. And then I also see two Metzgers on the council. So,
right.
Well, while things have changed in Gresham, things are pretty much the same in Gresham. So there we go.
Any other comments or questions? Do we want to interrogate this witness a while longer or anything of the sort? If not, let's see. I've already opened both a hearing and a work session, didn't I? I can't remember what I'm doing.
Send it to jury?
I thought
I close the public hearing.
Okay, I'll close the public hearing part.
Sorry.
And I'll open a work session part.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move House Concurrent Resolution 5 be adopted and sent to the Senate floor for adoption.
With a recommendation?
With a due pass. With a be adopted recommendation. There you go.
What he said.
Yeah. Whatever
Got
he
it.
Said.
Senator Starr has... See, I don't have a script in front of me either, because I'm too far from home. But
we're going to adopt the resolution.
Yeah. Go ahead, Judy. Tell me what I'm saying.
The motion before us is that Senator Starr moves that House Concurrent Resolution 5 be sent to the Senate floor with a be adopted recommendation.
It used to be simpler before we got so precise. Thank you for the be adopted part. Is there any further discussion? If not, let's have the clerk call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. The bill is adopted, the resolution is adopted and sent to the floor, and I'm sure you're going to have fun carrying it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
And with that, we'll close the work session on HCR 5 and open the informational meeting. We, the State Industry Accidents Fund, I'm asking Brenda Rockland to come forward. We're going to have an interesting time, I'm sure, for the next couple hours talking about all this that's in front of us. I don't know quite whether all of us received the report, and some, I'm sure, were in better shape to read it than others. I did some reading, and I have questions. I'm sure other members of the committee do. But if you would like to use a few minutes at the beginning to do a different approach to the executive summary or whatever you want, you can do that. Something that gives us a little structure to begin. Unless people just want to jump into questions, which could head us all over the map, and I'd rather have some outline. And I do like the executive summary is at least an outline of what's there.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Brenda Rothland, the interim president of SAFE Corporation. Mr. Chair, with your lead, let me tell you what I was planning to do this afternoon, but happy to adjust that to take into account whatever the committee would like today. What I was hoping to do was to accomplish three things this afternoon. First, I'd like to respond right off the bat to an issue that Senator Walker raised last Tuesday regarding bonus payments for fraud referrals, which I have addressed on page 28 of the report before you. Secondly, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about our contracts policy in general and some specific contracting issues specifically. And then finally, what I was hoping to spend most of the time today would be to respond to the committee's questions in pretty much any area of the report that you'd like me to go into today.
Okay, let me make kind of a list. I mean, you've talked about fraud referrals and contracting. As general topics, I'm going to ask the committee if they will likewise help me add to this list of some of the just subject areas. For example, I was quite interested in a tab that you gave us on Appendix 6, Diversity Report and Goals, and I was really shocked at how far behind the diversity goals. And you were very blunt and open, and I mean, you don't have to be defensive about it. You weren't running the operation, but it was amazing to look at those charts and see how far off the rest of the state, you know, you were. And so I want to do some talking about those diversity goals. But it occurred to me that while what's stated there is important, there's a kind of a corollary to that, and while the diversity part refers to your employees, I think you should talk a little bit, and if you're not ready to today, you can come back with it, but talk about the cultural competence of your staff as well, because we have a very diverse state. And, you know, I imagine that's a challenge for all of industry. You're part of the industry. But I'd like a little bit of reflection on the cultural competency of the organization in terms of dealing with its clients. Do any of the rest of you have some topic kind of arenas? I'm sure Vicky, Senator Walker, has about a dozen of them. But I want them. I wanted to write them down just to have a kind of a checklist.
Oh, do you want me just to give you my list?
Yeah.
And others will arise, but I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I'm not asking that it be inclusive.
Okay. Ms. Rockland mentioned contracting. I want to go into length about the group contracts. I want to discuss the lobbying situation. I'm not satisfied with that response. I also want to discuss executive salaries and oversight. There are additional areas. I have the fraud referrals she's going to address, and there was a couple others that I have highlighted in here.
Okay.
But that'll get us started.
Senator Verger?
Mr. Chairman, I want to just make a comment before we get started. I served on the CARISA investigation.
Right. Uh-huh.
At the time we investigated it, there were three people in the command center at the new CARISA landing. There was a Coast Guard person. There was a person that worked for the company. And there was a DEQ person. When we did the investigation, the DEQ person had been transferred to Seattle. The Coast Guard person had been transferred to Washington, D.C., and the company person was unavailable for comment and in London. At the end of the investigation, I felt like we had talked to everybody but the three people who were there. I think, in all fairness to Mrs. Rockland, she has been sent in to straighten up a situation that other people made.
Right.
And so I feel very compelled to say that her work is what she has found and tried to correct. And I feel very much like I'm back in the new CARISA investigation board appointed by the governor, that I couldn't get to the people that actually made the decisions. So,
thank you. That's a good analogy. And I don't know if I want to carry the analogy any farther, but shipwreck does come to mind.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Verger's point is well taken, and I suspect, Senator, that some of those people who are accountable will be accountable in a court of law rather than in front of our committee. Though, you know, I never thought about exercising a subpoena power or requesting those persons whom you believe may be responsible to come in and testify. But such as that is, the governor appointed Ms. Rockland to go in and clean up this mess. She's done a good job, and this is her report. And I think that this is the only way we're going to know what mess was cleaned up and how it was cleaned up and how it's going to be prevented from happening again.
Are there any others who would like to add to my short list of arenas and areas and so on? If not, let's just launch into this.
Very good. Mr. Chair, if I could just ask for one point of clarification of Senator Walker, just because I will cover all of the additional areas you've mentioned today. Senator, when you mentioned executive salaries and oversight, was that related to executive salaries, or was there another specific area there when you mentioned oversight that you wanted me to go into today?
Well, that would be, Ms. Rockland, on page 4 when you're discussing the Board of Directors at the top of the page.
Okay.
It says the Board has exercised its supervisory responsibility over SAFE's president, and I would take strong issue with that, and I just want to have a discussion about that. So, and then the executive salaries are sort of separate and apart from that.
Very good. That helped me. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me start then with the issue of bonus payments for fraud referrals, and I hope just kind of get that addressed right off the bat. On a number of occasions, Senator Walker has expressed her concern that SAFE claims adjusters are paid bonuses or commissions for referring claims to SAFE's fraud unit. We looked into this in connection with our report that's before you and found no evidence that that was true. We included our findings in that regard on page 28 of the report before you. As the committee will recall, at last week's hearing, Senator Walker gave me some additional information regarding that particular concern, and that was that she mentioned that she believed that it was possible that I think a safe claims adjuster had testified to that fact in a deposition. And what I would tell you that we did in response to that is that over the weekend we went through about 350 pages of deposition testimony, and we believe we've identified the deposition where that concern may have arisen. What we found, though, as we went through the deposition testimony was, again, we did not find any evidence that a SAFE claims adjuster had been given any sort of bonus or commission for referring cases to the fraud unit. What we did find was that in the year 2000, a former SAFE fraud investigator, not a claims adjuster, was deposed in a civil case, and it's a civil case I've mentioned where we went through the pages of testimony over the weekend. In that particular deposition, the investigator was asked whether she was evaluated by SAFE management based on the number of fraud cases she referred to the district attorney for prosecution. Her testimony in the deposition was that SAFE management, in fact, had identified certain goals for fraud referrals that were not set for individual fraud investigators, but that were set for the entire fraud team. She further testified that she had never been instructed to submit a certain number of cases to the district attorney for prosecution. I do understand Senator Walker's concern that claims adjusters should not receive bonuses for taking away workers' benefits. That is not happening. It is true, however, that a claims adjuster may occasionally receive information about potentially fraudulent activity, and I do think it's appropriate in that type of case for the claims adjuster to refer that matter to a fraud investigator in a separate unit at SAFE Corporation to look into the matter. It's then appropriate for the fraud investigator to look into the case and, if it's appropriate, refer that case to a district attorney for prosecution. But again, only if it's appropriate to do so. Because fraud investigators get cases that involve, you know, at least allegedly suspicious activity, it is SAFE's expectation that a certain number of those cases will wind up being referred to a district attorney to take a look at those cases for possible prosecution. Ultimately, as this committee well knows, it's up to the local district attorney to make a decision on whether a particular case is going to be prosecuted as theft or not. Even though I think it's appropriate that a certain number of those cases be referred to a district attorney for evaluation and potential prosecution, there is no commission, there is no bonus paid to SAFE fraud investigators for referring a case to the district attorney. The fact that there's a team goal set in that regard is just simply one factor that we look at in evaluating the fraud investigators in terms of how well they're doing, but it certainly doesn't result in a bonus or a commission. I hope that addresses the issue. If Senator Walker or any other members of the committee has something else that potentially I have not looked at, I am happy to continue to look at this issue, but I hope I've identified the right case you're referring to, Senator Walker, and that I've answered the question.
Senator Walker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rockland, can you give us the name of the deponent? Is that protected information?
No, at this point, I believe that would be public information, Mr. Chair, Senator Walker. She was a former SAFE investigator at the time she testified, was a woman by the name of Carol Dixon.
Okay. And can you give me the case, or is that protected information?
That I don't believe would be protected as either, and the case was Molly McAllister, plaintiff, versus Peggy Foster and Carol Dixon, defendants, and State Accident Insurance Fund, plaintiff, versus Molly McAllister, defendant, a case out of Lane County. And I've got the case number, Senator, if you'd wish that as well.
Mr. Chair, yes, you can provide that, and that is the case that I was referring to. And I was unable to locate my notes in the morass of paperwork that I have, and I couldn't get Ms. McAllister's phone number. I only have her address. So once I find my notes, I'll be contacting her and getting a copy of that deposition, though if you have it, I'd like to see it. But anyway, the case number?
Senator Walker, the case number is 16-00-07962, and I did bring this specific. I did personally read all 350 pages of the deposition testimony that I thought would be relevant, and so I did bring the specific pages for you of Ms. Dixon's testimony, if that would be helpful.
It would, Mr. Chair, and if I could ask another question. My recollection in my conversation with Ms. McAllister is that during the course of during the course of this deposition, it was revealed that previously this had been the practice. Was there a reference to that in the questioning?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I believe the testimony was, and it really came up solely in the testimony of Investigator Dixon, is that for a number of years, not just in this particular case, but for a number of years, SAFE had set certain performance standards for its staff, not just obviously in the fraud area, but in all areas of the company, we have performance expectations that we expect individuals and teams to meet. And that, in fact, over the course of years, one of the ways SAFE Corporation actually set performance measures in this area was to kind of look at what had happened in prior years in terms of the number of fraud referrals to local district attorneys and the amount of recoveries that had been made in this particular area, and attempted then to gauge the performance measures based at least in part on what had occurred in prior years. So that did come out during the testimony, that it was something that was kind of a long-standing performance measure.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I have another question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, and I appreciate that you took the time to review 350 pages of transcript. I always look at those with a different eye as a court reporter, checking to see how my professional colleagues do their work, if it's the same as mine. But the other question I had is that I do have information that after the reforms of 1990, in 1991, Stan Long, who was then president of SAFE Corporation, gave every employee $50, a $50 bonus, and a day's paid vacation in response to them being able to bring down their fraud claims. And that goes back a bit, so I'm not sure if you've gone back that far, but there is evidence in the record about that.
Senator Walker, what do you mean by bring down?
Safe Corporation had a number of claims, of workers' comp claims, not just fraud claims, but workers' comp claims. After the reforms of 1990, those claims went down significantly, in large part due to the high numbers of denials of claims that Safe was practicing. And that later was determined to be so through a Department of Consumer Business Services study. So they dropped their claims load significantly after the reforms, and Stan Long gave every employee a $50 bonus and a day's paid vacation for doing that. And I would be happy to provide the committee with the copy of the letter that Stan Long sent out to the employees giving them that money and that day's paid vacation. So I don't know, Ms. Rocklin, if you went back that far in terms of looking at the bonus issue.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I did not. I would be happy to do so. I will tell you that what I did go back and look specifically was really when you and I had the conversation in your office, and then as we discussed at these committee hearings, I thought the issue was really whether we were paying bonuses now or recently in the past to claims adjusters for making referrals to our fraud unit. So I looked specifically at that particular issue and determined, I think accurately, that that was not occurring, not occurring now, and had not been occurring at Safe Corporation, and then broadened that inquiry this weekend to look to see specifically whether it was some there was some issue with employees other than claims adjusters.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was the scope of my inquiry at that time, and it was after that meeting that I learned about the other bonus that had been given out by Stan Long. So I don't know if there have been any other situations like that since that occurrence. So I'd like to know if you could give me some of that information.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker would be happy to do so. I think, as you'll see in another part of the report dealing with both executive compensation and employee compensation and benefits, we really went back about 5 years and took a look at in detail at a lot of different areas of the company, but unless there was a specific reason for me to go beyond that, a lot of times I only went back about 5 years and took an in-depth look, and that would include did take a look at any type of bonuses or kind of out of the ordinary adjustments to salary that would have occurred during that 5 year period, and I've addressed that at least briefly in the report. But I'm happy to go back 15 years or so if that would be helpful.
Well, I would just, Ms. Chair, I would just like to know if there have been any bonuses provided to Safe Corporation employees between the time Stan Long gave that first bonus and now.
Okay.
If that's a regular practice or if it's an infrequent practice or what. And that, you know, that bonus was cash, albeit $50 was small, but it also was a day's paid vacation, which amounted to a great deal of money, I would think, for an organization as large as Safe.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I think I can represent that since 2000, that has not occurred based on my review of the records in Safe, but I will be happy to look beyond that and get back to you on that.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And with that, Mr. Chair, let me turn to contracts and jump into that issue and again be happy to take any questions that the committee may have on that area.
Specifically, tell the committee where you'll be working from in the report.
I'll do that. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I'd like to do in the contracts area is talk about contracts in general, and so that would be pages 53 through 55 of my report to the governor. And then I'll go into some specific contracting areas that I know the committee's interested in and Senator Walker mentioned specifically. And I'll refer you to those pages, too, as well. But in terms of general contract issues, again, pages 53 through 55, I just wanted to give the committee, I guess, a little bit of background on what we've really done in the contracts area, because we spent a significant chunk of time over the past 6 months working on that area. When Ms. Seelock and I got there, we took a look at the contracts templates that Safe Corporation was using, and we took a look at our contracts policy and determined that both needed to be changed to be able to move forward. And so you will see that we have updated our contracts policy, and we've attached a copy of that in the appendix to our report. We also worked with the Department of Justice to update our contracts templates, because what we discovered is that to the extent there have been some complaints about some of our prior contracts, some of that was simply the result of using either outdated contract templates or just kind of modified contract templates that we felt needed to go back through the Department of Justice, so we just clearly had the right templates that were in front of all of us when we do a contract. As part of our review of the contracts, we also have decided to put two contracts officers in place who actually then review all of the contracts that Safe Corporation enters into. That really acts as a guarantee, I think, that we're using the right templates and that there's really, we're making a business case for all of those contracts before we move forward. The contracts officers have also been instructed that when it's appropriate to do so, we need to call on the Department of Justice to get legal advice on particular contracts. That had not been occurring at Safe Corporation for some period of time. The other thing that we're doing now that will help us in the public records area is that we now track all contracts in one central location, and all of the contracts are filed in one central location. So we don't have the situation that arose over the last couple years where some of the contracts were actually filed in different parts of the company, including the president's office, and they weren't filed in a central location. So when a public records request came in, there wasn't one central location to go to and obtain not just the contract but all of the documents associated with that contract. So I think we've fixed that going forward. I think the most important part of the contracts policy and process, though, is something that we've talked a little bit about, and we've talked about it in connection with Senate Bill 310, but we've now made it clear in our contracts policy and procedure that the Board of Directors needs to review certain contracts and approve those contracts before we would enter into those. And let me just go over those areas quickly so you know the particular contracts that the board now sees. They would see any group or trade association contract regardless of the size of that. If it's, you know, $50 or it's $1 million, the board of directors now sees all of those contracts. They would see any contracts that involve public relations, any contracts that involve lobbying, any contracts over $500,000, and any contracts longer than 3 years. So we don't have, we've had contracts in the past that have been longer than 3 years. That doesn't mean it wouldn't happen in the future, but if any of those contracts exceed 3 years, regardless of the amount, they would need to go to the board for approval. And the board also, as they've always had the right to do, but by our contracts policy now expressly has the right to ask us to review any other type of contract that they would like to see before we would actually approve the contract.
Brenda, it occurs to me that I'm sitting on the board of a community college right now, and I've sat on a lot of nonprofit boards. What you've just outlined is not rocket science. On all my boards of directors, the policy was pretty clear that we knew which contracts met the tipping point where they'd be brought to us, and it was very clear. And if it came close to the tipping point, they might want to give us a heads up anyway. How do we ever get to a position in SAFE where that culture became so isolated from the rest of board culture? You know what I mean? Boards of, maybe I'm wrong, maybe industry is very much different than the kind of nonprofits and so on I've been on, but I'd just like you to comment a little bit.
Well, Mr. Chair, that is a very fair question. I'm not sure I'm going to have a good answer to that today. Because I will tell you that my experience is very much like your experience, whether it's running an agency or being on a board, that certain types of contracts generally would come before the board of directors for approval. And certainly I think some boards do things differently where they may see all of the contracts. I think it depending on how many contracts you actually do, that can really bog a board down, and I'm not certain that that's the right way to go either. But I do think my experience has been that certain types of contracts come before a board to approve. I cannot explain. I don't have a good explanation for this. Partly, you know, this kind of goes back to the conversation we had earlier about the new CARISA, is that I have not had conversations I've certainly had conversations with prior board members, current board members, and then the executive staff at Safe Corporation that remains. I have not had conversations with the former president about the policies. I will tell you, having read all of the board minutes for the past 5 years, though, it was just the practice that board did not review contracts. And I just don't have a good explanation for you. I don't think that's good practice, obviously, and I think that's why we've implemented the new practice, and I think the board's very comfortable with that. And in fact, the board, I will tell you, to their credit on their own, really came forward with a resolution early in 2004 and said, we want to see specific types of contracts before you would enter into them. And it was in the public relations lobbying areas where there had been some controversy, and they said they wanted to see those. So I don't know if that's been a long-standing practice from the time SAFE was governed by a board of directors, but I can tell you that just was not the practice.
You're in an interesting position because I'm not asking you to be an apologist for the past. I mean, you're the director now, and so, you know, like you just said, you can't have a good answer because there isn't one, you know, and I want you to share that kind of stuff with the committee as it comes forward. It's really disturbing to me. It's kind of a, I don't know, on the part of the executive. I mean, if I were an executive of such a thing, and I think if you were, you wouldn't want to be hanging out there without having your board's approval for some of the contracts that came to light in this last couple years. I don't think you would, at least.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't. I mean, I think board oversight's important. I think that's what a board does, and I think certainly the SAFE board is willing to do that. It's just that the practice had not been to do that.
A question out of that, and I know this is kind of loaded, but had there developed in SAFE kind of a culture among the executive staff, kind of a culture of arrogance that these board of directors types were just rubber stamps? They weren't, you know, really decision makers. They weren't to be taken seriously. I mean, you know, I'm not. I guess I don't want you to answer the question, but I want you to think about it, and I'd like to have some conversations at some point. Because I'm going back to Senator Verger. We're not getting to talk to the three people from the CARISA, you know, that were actually there, that were actually eyewitnesses. But it really makes you wonder what was going on, you know.
Well, Mr. Chair, let me. I appreciate you saying you don't have to answer this. Think about it, but I do want to answer part of that, because I cannot speak today for the former president, but I think I can speak for the current executive staff members at SAFE Corporation, because I've had a chance to work daily, including nights and weekends, with the current members of my executive staff. And I will tell you that none of them have that attitude that they're arrogant or that the SAFE Board of Directors doesn't play an important role at SAFE Corporation. I can tell you if they had that attitude, they wouldn't be at SAFE Corporation today. So what I have found is that the current members of the staff really do understand the value that a board of directors have, and not just the not just on paper, but exactly for the reason you just gave, of how important it is for us to, A, have that discussion with the board to get their input on whether this is a good business decision or not to enter into that contract, respect the fact that they bring a certain, a different view to that sometimes that's important for us to consider, and that it is very important to have the board oversight, just not just because it sounds good, but because it brings a lot of value to the table in helping us make the right decision for Safe Corporation, which is where we want to be. So I am confident today that the executive team gets that.
Senator Verger.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are any of the same people on the board today?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, one person, the current chair of the SAFE board, John Anhorn, who's a business person out in Medford, has been on the SAFE board for about 2 years. He is the only holdover, and we have two new board members and are waiting to get the additional two board members through appointment by the governor and Senate confirmation.
Follow-up, please.
Yeah.
Yes. What I would say is that while the board did not approve the contracts, at some point in time they saw a list of the contracts that Safe Corporation had. That would be in some report somewhere to the board members. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, not really a list. What they would have seen had they, this kind of goes back to the whole budget discussion, which we can talk about today as well, but had they gone through the budget at a really fine level of detail, they would have seen all of those contracts in the budget, because in fact we obviously budget for those contracts. So yes, it was there if you were willing to probe through all of the budget information and get to that level of detail in approving the budget. So it was there. It was not presented as a list of contracts. They certainly could have asked for that, because we have a list of contracts, but I don't believe it was presented as a list, as you may see with other agencies.
Well, and some budgets can be very, very large, and sometimes you don't get to all of the detail. It would give the appearance, and certainly you don't know this and I don't know this, but it gives the appearance of a wink and a nod. And that's not a good feeling. So it's kind of, if you didn't know, you should have known. And if you knew, that is the wink and the nod. And so those are troubling things. And certainly I'm relieved to know that that kind of policy wouldn't continue in the future.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, I think certainly wouldn't continue in the future. And maybe just as further explanation, you know, what it appears to me, having reviewed the record, is just this, that the contracts issue was just certainly, other than as a budget issue, was just certainly something that the prior board didn't focus on. I think really had delegated that to the president and the executive team to actually take care of that particular part of the business. And so it's not happening now, but I think that's what had occurred really, is that the board just felt comfortable letting the president take care of those particular contracts.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those were very good questions that Senator Verger asked, and I think one of the reasons that probably the former president kept Neil Goldschmidt's contract in her office is because she knew the board would be astounded to find out that she was paying $40,000 a month for his services. So that's no surprise that she wanted to keep that somewhere else. Let me ask you this question, because you talked about the board. I believe there are still two positions vacant on the board because we just confirmed two in the last couple months, and we had one, so that's three, and there's five. So when does the governor plan on offering up some additional names? Because I note on page 4 of your report, you state, once all of the positions on the current SAFE Board are filled, the SAFE Board and SAFE Senior Management should have a strategic planning session to discuss corporate goals, missions, and long-term business strategies, which I think is an excellent idea. But when are you ever going to get to that if we don't get two more members? So can you give us some idea when we might see that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, again, not trying to dodge the question. I know the governor's working on that, but I don't have a set time frame today on when we might see two new board members.
Okay. Well, it doesn't surprise me. Let me see. The next question I wanted to ask is, who is the SAFE president responsible to, directly to the governor or to the board of directors or to whom?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, by statute, the SAFE president is actually hired and fired by SAFE's board of directors. So it's not like there are certainly other agencies where it's an appointment by the governor and confirmation by the Senate. This is a position, though, that the board of directors hires and fires, and that the president serves at the pleasure of the board of directors.
So, Mr. Chair, can I just continue?
Yes,
thank
I'm going
you.
To let you do that.
Okay, thank you. So when I made my allegations over a year ago about the lobbying contracts and asked the governor to fire the board because it was apparent they were derelict in their duties, he didn't do that. But instead, he asked Kathy Keene to step down, but he didn't have that authority to do that. The board, that was the board's responsibility, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, statutorily, it's the board of directors who hire and fire the president of SAFE Corporation. And as you know, the governor, though, appoints the board of directors subject to Senate confirmation.
Right, and he can dismiss them subject to his own whims. Without Senate confirmation, correct?
That's correct. Okay. The Senate confirms the appointment, but the governor makes a decision on how long they serve.
Okay, that answers my questions for the moment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Rockland. Thanks.
Continue.
Let me turn now to three specific contracting areas, and I'm going to talk about briefly about advertising, group and trade association contracts, and lobbying contracts. And those, in terms of where that is in the report, starts on page 56 and is in that's kind of back-to-back in that area. Although I'm going to start with advertising because I just have a couple comments on that unless there are questions, and that's on page 60.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
In the advertising area, I mentioned this last time, but just to review with the committee to see if there are any questions. SAFE Corporation had a fairly long-term contract with Gard and Gerber out of Portland for its advertising services. That was had been a five-year contract. At the end of 2004, a SAFE Corporation had the opportunity to renew that for two more years. I made the decision not to renew the contract because I felt it was appropriate after 5 years that we actually go out on an RFP and give other advertising companies the opportunity to have a conversation with SAFE about advertising and be able to bid on that particular contract. The other thing, though, and I will tell you, we have not put out an RFP. We're still thinking through that, because the other thing I wanted to do before we did really any more extensive advertising or had any relationship with an advertising agency was really to step back and take a look in consultation with the board of directors about what we wanted to do with advertising in the future and really try to figure out that before we decided we're going to run a whole bunch of ads or not really have a strategy in place. And this kind of goes back to that whole area that Senator Walker mentioned about a strategic planning session. I think we've really come to that stage where we just need to have that discussion with the board and senior management about where we want to go with advertising services before we just start throwing money at it. So that's where we are. I know that's not a complete answer for today, but certainly by the time we do a final report, I think we'll have a much more well-defined advertising plan for Safe Corporation into the future, and not just a one-year plan, but really trying to take a look at this more as a long-term strategy for Safe Corporation on how we get our message out to Oregonians and how we sell insurance. So in both of those areas.
It's kind of interesting to me that we're going to return to kind of this is on hold, that's on hold, this is on hold, because the board of directors isn't complete. You can't have that overall strategizing, goal-setting retreat or whatever they would have, and things like this advertising services thing cast away. I mean, I imagine it's going to be a repeated theme in several things that you're going to talk about. Maybe we should make it a list so we have it up, you know, kind of as a picture. Go ahead.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I certainly have a
Star wants to ask a
have a list. And
okay.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. I appreciate the fact you're going to go out for an RFP and that you're going to wait and figure out what you want to advertise. But do you have any issues with the work that Garden Groovers did for SAFE in your review of SAFE? I mean, the fact that you're not renewing them isn't because they didn't do good work, or could you comment on some of the work that Garden Groover did? And I think there's some controversy surrounding the work that Garden Groover has done.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, in terms of, kind of two things going on there. One, I think the advertising work itself, and some of the issues I have on that is just that we obviously spent quite a bit of money, as I've set out in the report, and you can actually get a chance to see that. But I thought just going forward there were some work that we could actually do internally. And maybe it all didn't need to go through an advertising agency, and that would result in some cost savings. So it's really taking a look on the strictly advertising side of this. Is there really just a better way to do it in terms of using both internal staff and then an advertising agency working in conjunction, but also then taking a look at the strategy about what's the message for Safe Corporation and what should that message be. The other side of that with Garden Groover that I think that we've talked about as being more controversial in terms of these hearings was some of their recommendations, I think, on strategies in terms of how to reach certain individuals or certain segments of the market that I think that came out during this public records lawsuit that I think many people, and I will say including me, disagreed with that as a strategy. So on that front, I think there is some disagreement about whether that was a strategy or an appropriate strategy. In fairness to Garden Groover, though, I will tell you that again, I don't know whether that was their idea or whether that came from upper Safe Management. So in fairness to them, I don't want to say that was necessarily their idea entirely.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. So, and I appreciate that. So it's basically, Brian Gard's responding to a directive from the former CEO. Please provide us, your thoughts on how to do X, Y, and Z and the agency responding to those. But from your perspective, moving forward, that kind of advertising, public relations isn't where this new leadership at SAFE is headed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that's accurate. I think that's very very well put. That Mr. Gard may have been asked to come up with some strategies that I certainly wouldn't ask him to necessarily come up with. But I think, in fairness to him, that may have been the direction that he was given to work from. So, but going forward, you're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Let's continue.
Oh, I have some questions.
Okay, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's along the lines of Gordon Gerber, because I actually read, Ms. Rockland, in here that you found no evidence of Gordon Gerber directing letters to the editor against legislators. But I have that evidence. It came from Safe Files. And it's my understanding, I mean, they wrote letters to the editor about me and got folks to sign them, and they appeared in newspapers. And I have copies of the email going from Gordon Gerber to Safe Corporation saying, you know, here's the letter. But what I also heard, I either read or heard, that Brian Gard recommended that they not do this, that they not engage in that kind of strategy, but that strategy, that recommendation was ignored, but the letters were drafted nonetheless, and I have them right here in front of me. So maybe you could respond to that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I have seen those letters in the, I believe they're attached to Mr. DiLorenzo's testimony in mm-hmm. front of this committee, so I have certainly seen those records. I don't believe we said that those didn't exist. They obviously do exist. I've seen them too. I think what we said specifically in this, it's actually not in the advertising area. I believe it would be,
if you're referring to a place, Senator Walker, if she doesn't have the page reference, you can give it to us.
Yes. Well, it's on page 64, I believe, Mr. Chair, at the bottom of the page, where we said that the allegation was that SAFE had purchased advertising that was targeted at selected members of the legislature. We found no evidence to support that claim. And maybe depending on how you define advertising, I was defining that as, an actual advertising campaign, not letters to the editor. So that may be a semantics issue.
Right. And, Mr. Chair, if I could continue.
Yes, Senator Walker.
There was evidence of an advertising campaign in some of these documents when we had bills before the legislature. For instance, they increased advertising at the Portland airport. They increased radio ads. They did other things that were directed at legislators. I have the files from the 99 session, I believe, or the 01 session. I think it was, I can't remember which one it is, where we were really close to making some major changes with SAFE, and it was a full court press, and we were having these hearings down in hearing room 50, and my fax machine was just smoking at the Capitol from all these businesses in my district who had been contacted by SAFE Corporation on the advice and consultation with Gordon Gerber that this is the strategy to employ. So that's why I had trouble with that comment, that you couldn't find any evidence to support that claim.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, again, I think a matter of semantics, because if you look at that same page, page 64, we have specifically addressed, whether you want to call it a blast fax or something like that, where SAFE in the past has asked its customers or employers to respond to legislators on particular legislation. And we have addressed that specifically and said that going forward, we don't intend to do that. We're going to be more in an educational posture and get out of the political arena in that area. So we have addressed that specific point, I think, on page 64 as well. And again, I think to the extent that the very bottom of that page where you're reading the term advertising, I think we're talking about limited to, you know, an actual advertising campaign to a particular legislator's district, and that's all I'm talking about, that we didn't find any evidence of that particular conduct.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Ross.
Let's go with Senator Verger and then Senator George. Go ahead.
Mrs. Rackland, whether it's Gordon Gerber or advertising or lobbying or other contracts, it just seems to me that there was a total disregard of the value of money that did not belong to them. It was other people's money, which is very easy to spend. And I believe that to me, is just the striking message that I get from this entire thing. And I've noticed where you have reduced the advertising budget, and I hope that there can be a mindset within Safe Corporation that this money is not theirs and they must spend it as frugally as possible.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, very good point. Absolutely true. It's not Safe Corporation's money to spend unless we can justify every dollar we spend.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Rockland, I'm a little bit troubled by, encouraged on one hand, but troubled on the other hand. From this standpoint, what assurance do we have that the electronic, the paper trail of any communication between any of the contractors that are doing lobbying, or, you know, or advertising, or whatever other words we describe, what assurance do we have those are going to be available for the public, that at least the legislators will be able to take a look at those and be able to do the smell test ourselves as to whether we think there are, is all that communication going to be open to the public view?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that is all public information, I think, as has been demonstrated over the past year as we've turned over emails and contracts and paper trails time and time again. I mean, I just don't think there's any question that contracts and documents relating to those contracts are public records, and when there's a request, whether it's a legislator or a member of the public, Safe Corporation needs to turn those documents over unless there's a specific exemption under the law that protects that information. And generally, when it's a signed contract, I can't think of what the exemption would be that would allow us not to turn that over.
Appreciate that, because I was going to ask, what is that exception?
Well, there's only, you know, Safe Corporation, when we'll have more discussions about this with Senate Bill 310 and other public records bills before you, but right now Safe has only two exemptions in the law. It's got to be a claimant file, or it's got to be an employer account record. And there's still some discussion going on with Safe Corporation and the Department of Justice about exactly what does that term mean and what does the term claimant records mean. But those are the only two exemptions under the law that apply to Safe Corporation.
I'm extremely concerned about this transparency issue, and one of the things that I'm concerned about is that there's going to be an auditor who's going to review all of those contracts and those sort of things, but it's going to be an employee of SAFE. How do I have assurance that that's going to be an unbiased and fair analysis of what really was going on?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, let me talk about that specifically in the group contract area, because we've had kind of some extensive discussions among staff, I think, on that very issue. And one of the things that I think we've now concluded is that we think it makes sense on those particular contracts to actually hire an outside auditor, contract with somebody on the outside of Safe Corporation who actually can come in and audit those contracts. So that will be done. But on the same time, I do think it's important, for all of the reasons I've set out in the report, that we actually have an internal auditor on staff to really take a look at risk issues for the agency and make certain that we've got the processes in place for everything from accounting to group contracts in the future. I just think it's important to have an auditor on staff to do that. But I will tell you that on the group contracts, we're actually going to hire somebody from the outside and are working on that. We worked on that this morning. We'll I think, be moving forward on that very quickly.
Any other questions? Senator Berger.
One quick question. Would you comment on the mutual consent that is in the contract with the Victory Group?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will, Mr. Chair, Senator Berger. That isn't a standard contract paragraph, as I think everybody on the committee knows. I can't tell you that I know where that came from. That is a Safe template. That's not that template didn't come from the Victory Group. It's actually a Safe template. And exactly how that language came about, I don't know. Generally, as you know, whether it's 30 days or 90 days or sometimes 120 days, but generally both parties would have the opportunity to to terminate a contract for any reason after giving so many days' notice, and that just simply wasn't done in this case.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to hold that question till later, but now that Senator Berger's brought it up, I want to jump in on that one.
Yes, I'm bemused and bewildered. And
so am I. I find that the most stunning piece of arrogance that's come out of this mess. Ms. Rockland, I'm looking at the previous contract with the Victory Group, and it had a termination clause at point 14. This contract may be terminated by mutual consent of both parties or by either party upon 30 days' notice in writing and delivered by certified mail or in person. That provision, I've not seen a new contract, but I've learned that that provision no longer exists, and that it was Cecil Tibbetts who agreed to the new terms in the new contract. Am I correct in those assumptions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, you are correct. It is actually the new contract is actually attached as an appendix to the report.
I forgot about that. Thank you.
And it's actually paragraph 13 now. And it appears that the language about the timeline for termination just simply got dropped out, so it now just reads that this contract may be terminated or modified by mutual consent of both parties. And you're correct that it was entered into by Mr. Tibbetts.
And Mr. Chair, could I just continue with a couple? Mr. Tibbetts no longer is in the employ of Safe Corporation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, that's correct.
Okay, that's good confirmation to hear. The second question I have is I have had several conversations over the years with both your internal government relations person, Mr. Chris Davey, and also with the former president of Safe Corporation, Catherine King. When I asked why Mr. Goldschmidt and Mr. Campbell were both employed as lobbyists, the answer I received from Mr. Davey was that Mr. Goldschmidt was hired for strategic analysis and insight, which has since become quite an entertaining term of art, but that Mr. Campbell was hired specifically, Mr. Campbell and the Victory Group was hired specifically to lobby Republican legislators. It's in my notes. It's clearly what he said. So I have to ask you how it is that you find that a lobbyist who's hired specifically to lobby only Republican members of the legislature, and the last time I looked, there's 90 of us and we're from both parties. Why is it that that contract is seen as being a good business decision to keep? I suspect it might be because you can't terminate it without paying him his salary, but I'd love to hear an answer to that question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, a couple of things. In terms of whether this is an appropriate contract or not, I mean, certainly, as you know from my report, I did ask the Department of Justice to take a look at the contract, and it's a valid contract, and so there obviously would be a penalty to cancel the contract. But I will also tell you that, I can't, again, speak to what Ms. Keene's direction was to Kevin Campbell and Larry Campbell in terms of this contract, but my expectation would be that they would talk to Republicans and Democrats alike in terms of lobbying for Safe Corporation. So, and you know, I'm just telling you that I don't think that it's limited to only talking to Republicans.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I need to follow up with that. Last session, I was trying to negotiate a deal with Safe Corporation over this public records issue. Catherine King was pretty resistant to that deal. We held up some pretty major legislation while we were working on crafting that deal. I met with Mr. Campbell in the hallway, and I said, come on up and see me, Larry. I'd like to talk to you about a proposal that might settle this problem. And guess who showed up? It wasn't Mr. Campbell. It was Mr. Davey. Mr. Davey came to my office, and when he told me that he could not accept the deal, I asked him if he wanted to sign a document saying that I advised him that he should accept the deal or some such thing, and he didn't want to do that because I knew they were going to lose in court. But he didn't accept the deal. But my point is that Mr. Davey came to my office and not Mr. Campbell when I asked. And I, you know, I'll have to tell you, I'll be honest with you, that of the two people, Goldschmidt and Campbell, whom were hired, Larry worked his hiney off for Safe Corporation. But in what respect? And so that is the broad question and the broad issue I have about how you're determining that is a good business practice.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, what I have concluded, having looked at this issue, is that there isn't certainly anything that in the law. And as you've read the report, you know I took a look at the governor's executive order. I took a look at the DAS rules relating to outside lobbyists, and there isn't anything to preclude Safe Corporation or any other public agency, for that matter, from hiring an outside lobbyist. And what I've concluded is that I don't see anything inappropriate in Safe having an outside lobbyist. And in fact, I think from a business standpoint, given the fact that unlike other public agencies, Safe is part of the competitive marketplace, and has to defend, I think, Safe's continued existence in the marketplace during legislative sessions, it's appropriate to have an outside lobbyist. We can debate whether Safe Corporation has the right lobbyist. I think that both Kevin and Larry Campbell have done a very good job for Safe Corporation this session, and I can only speak to this session. I am confident that they will meet with Democrats and Republicans alike. I think they know that would be my expectation with that contract, and I think they've done a good job. And for those reasons, I intend to honor the contract, and I think that's an issue, once again, that the board of directors needs to weigh in on if we were to enter into any future lobbying contracts. I think that's a very good discussion for the board to have on who the lobbyist should be for Safe Corporation and why.
I do have to say that whenever I've asked Mr. Campbell to come by my office or to have a conversation about an issue, he's always been available to me. So I guess different people have experienced him differently.
Yeah, I think you have one other question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Ms. Rockland, you indicated that SAFE is creating lobbying guidelines. Let me ask you if those will differ from the model guidelines recommended for agencies by the Department of Administrative Services. And if so, why? If not, great.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I think, you know, we've spent some time taking a look at those guidelines. I would tell you that Safe Corporation is currently operating within those guidelines. And so I can't imagine now, will we maybe have ours a little bit different from that? I think so. I can tell you partly because I think there's some language particularly at the front end there that and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have it right in front of me, that basically says be professional, be polite when you deal with the Oregon legislature, and really I don't think you have to say that. That's an expectation, and I don't think you have to say that in guidelines to your employees. But I do think we will have very similar guidelines and intend to present those at our next board meeting.
Okay, Mr. Chair, in regards to that would be something that you would discuss with your board now rather than waiting until you get a full board, because the full board's more for your long-term planning.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I do intend to present those guidelines to the board at its next meeting, just like we went through the contracts policy with the board. I intend to do that at our next meeting. So I will, and I will report back to that at the end of when we do the final report, but I will, that will move forward before then.
And I found one other question, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rockland, did you find any other contracts that had a termination clause like this one that doesn't exist, actually, where it requires mutual consent?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I didn't find any other, doesn't mean they don't exist, because I have not reviewed, obviously, every contract. I didn't find anything specifically on the mutual consent, although I would tell you that we had some group contracts that they weren't necessarily mutual consent, but they did simply renew after a period of time, unless one of the parties gave notice that they wanted to terminate the contract. The contract would essentially kind of just roll over, and we've stopped that practice as well. So now there's actually a termination date in the contracts, but both sides could give notice, whether it's, again, 30 or 90 days, to actually get out of the contract for any reason.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Rockland. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Verger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mrs. Rockland, you know, one of the things I wish that you could probably answer for me, and that is, obviously, anytime things happen like this, there becomes a certain level of discomfort. And that discomfort has been greatly alleviated for me by your presence here and by your work that has been done before this. And I sincerely mean that. And I was very, very glad to see you chosen as the one to take on the SAFE Corporation. I wonder, though, if you couldn't address that in more of a general way in how you feel that we can restore the kind of confidence. Obviously, we had an election. SAFE Corporation did very well. I have a District 5, which begins in Coos Bay and goes to Lincoln City. The predominantly number of the businesses in my district are SAFE businesses, and they like it. They don't like what happened. They don't like the publicity. None of us do. So I would like things to just be better. And I guess I'm asking you to tell me and assure me that they're going to be better, but in a very general sense. I know we've kind of zeroed in on contracts, but you have a number of other things in your report. And I wonder if just for today, if you might just summarize for me a little bit of some of the bright spots that you see and some of the things that you've done to change.
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Verger, let me take a stab at that, because I think what I have found at SAFE Corporation is very consistent with what the governor said early on when he announced that he was going to change, ask the board to change who the president was at SAFE Corporation. And that is that there had been a problem at the top at SAFE Corporation, and that the other employees, and I think he talked about 814 other employees at SAFE Corporation, were doing the right job for Oregon workers and Oregon employers. And the company was running at a very good level. It was just these issues, and it was headline after headline. You're absolutely right about that. But it really was an issue at the very top of SAFE Corporation. And I will tell you that that's really consistent with what I found at SAFE Corporation, that the employees, they know what they're doing. They care very much about the mission of SAFE Corporation. Many of them have been there for years and years and years, and it's because of their commitment to Oregon injured workers and Oregon employers that they continue to stay there, notwithstanding the fact that they went through a pretty couple difficult years of having their company in the news day after day and not in a very positive light most time. But I think that it's really the fact that the employees really do understand the mission of SAFE Corporation and I think are happy to be moving forward and just getting back to work to do what we should be doing every day to keep rates low and helping injured workers either not get hurt or if they do get hurt, getting them back to work and paying the benefits that we should be paying. The other positive thing I will say about SAFE Corporation, I've said this a little bit initially, but I will tell you that for the top level managers, I have some expectations for all of them, and it's really a high degree of integrity, the accountability, understanding SAFE's public mission, and really knowing what they're doing. And I will tell you that I have full confidence that all of the top managers currently at Safe Corporation meet all of those high standards. The other thing that I think is positive, and, you know, when you read through the report and, you know, what I talked about were the areas where I found problems, and what we've done really to try to move forward from that. And if you look at it in terms of only the, you know, there seems to be quite a few problems, but they're problems that were fixable, and they're problems that by and large have been fixed by just simply putting in new policies and procedures in place to say, look, this shouldn't have happened, and it's not going to happen in the future, not just because I'm there, but because the current management team, if I left tomorrow, the current management team gets all of this, and they understand the importance of that and can move safe forward. The board of directors, I think, you know, whatever happened in the past, the current board of directors, and it's true we've only got three instead of five, but they fully understand the expectation that the governor has of all of them, that they do engage in oversight of Safe Corporation, and they take that job very seriously. They've demonstrated that to me time and time again, that they are going to review what we're doing, they are paying attention, and they're very interested in getting Safe back on track. And maybe the final point, and if there are other things that you want me to talk about, I will, but, you know, the reality is, it's just a lot of hard work. And we've had a lot of negative headlines. You don't turn it around overnight. And I just think we've got a lot of hard work. You know, I think that what my job really is to do over the course of the next couple years is to convince every Oregon voter who voted really for Safe Corporation in that election that they made the right choice, mm-hmm. that we had some issues, we fixed them, and we're going back to work. And so that really is my mission over the next couple years, is to really convince Oregonians we've put that behind us and we're the top-notch insurance company that we have been and that will continue to be into the future.
Mr. Vice Chair, could I have a follow-up, please? Mrs. Rockman, would you just talk a little bit about the three members that are the sitting members of the board, their names and a little bit about their background?
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Berger, yes. John Anhorn, who recently became the chair of the SAFE board, is the CEO of Premier Bank out of Medford and actually Northern California, et cetera. And I can't remember how many banks, but he actually runs a number of banks. He's, as I've said, been the longest serving member of the SAFE board. He's been there about 2 years, but he brings a good business perspective to the SAFE board and has really been, I think, engaged in, he was very interested in the budget and has been very interested in kind of getting back to business, get out of the politics and get back to business. Matt Hennessy is one of our newest board members. In fact, Matt Hennessy and John Endicott, the other board member, were confirmed by the Senate on the same day. Matt Hennessy was the former director of the workers' comp division, so he's had some workers' comp experience in his past. Currently, and I'm drawing a blank now, he currently runs a technology company out of Portland. John Endicott is a member of runs the pipe fitter and steam fitters union out of Gresham, actually. And we've really, in the past, we've kind of had a seat, even though it's not statutorily authorized, we've had a seat for labor mm-hmm. on the PERS board, and John Endicott fills that role.
Mm-hmm. Probably quite well.
Yes, he does. So, and I, all three of those individuals are very, very engaged in Safe Corporation's business.
Right. Thank you very much for that review and for talking a little bit about the members of the board.
You're very welcome.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Rockland, I'm still concerned about this idea of where are we really going to go from here? Because ever since I've been in this building, I've seen a culture coming out of SAFE, even prior to the time it was moved out and everything else. What I would describe is just arrogance, condescending arrogance towards the legislators. I'm not going to answer your question. most of us had no idea what was going on with these deals that were being made with certain, you know, we suspected they were there. And then lobbying, we suspected major lobbying. I even suspected, Mr. Chairman, that there was a Democrat representative and a Republican representative. And but the thing that bothers me the most is we have the potential with the dollars that are flowing around. And I'm going to pick on AGC right now. We have a $100,000 payment that's going to go out to them for rent for their education programs. Do we know that those dollars, are we sending instruction to them? These are not to be used for political purposes. Or is that tied up close enough to be able to do that? Second question is, how do we know that the agency is not going to cross the line when you yourself do the communication, the blast faxes, the emails that are going to come pouring in here? And I can tell you, and the reason I'm going to ask this question, Mr. Chairman, the two questions, is that the point at which I said, you know, I'm not taking a position on this agency relative to this election from here on out, because too many things begin to become unraveled. I sit in committees just a few doors down in which we heard things. Immediately, I had heat turned on me in my campaign. What I want to ask from you is, would you answer the first two questions and then say, tell me what assurance can we have that that's not going to happen again or continue to happen?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair George, let me start with AGC, because that is a contract, a group contract that the board of directors actually had a chance last fall to actually take a look at for the first time, and I actually had a chance to take a look at that contract. I will tell you that I have had specific conversations with AGC about the uses of the money, and I am convinced, based on my conversations with AGC, that the dollars are appropriated for the specific reasons that are set forth in the contract we have with AGC. They've assured me of that, and I think what I've told our group partners is that we're going to take an audit. We're going to actually audit this. We're going to take a look at this. And to their credit, all of them have said to me, "Fine, we're willing to cooperate with that." And so, I guess that's what I can tell you today is that it's not that I didn't look into that. I did. And AGC has assured me that the dollars go to what the contract says they do, and I have not seen anything to suggest otherwise. On the blast faxes, what I've said in the report is that we don't intend to do that in the future. And in terms of the arrogance, I apologize for the past. I can't fix that. I can tell you I can fix the future, though. And whether it's me or any member of my staff, that you get a sense that they haven't answered your question directly, that they've been arrogant, if you will call me, and even if it's me, you can say you were arrogant. And I won't tolerate that. I think we owe every legislator, I don't care what party you're in, we owe every legislator a direct, honest answer to questions you have. And that's where I'm going to be. And I don't think there's any question of anybody who currently works at Safe Corporation that's where management is today. So if you've got a complaint, you're welcome to call me directly, and if it's a complaint about me, I'd encourage you to call the board or the governor. So please do that.
Thank you. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I handed to Senator Starr some copies of the communications plans that Garden Gerber had prepared for Safe Corporation. And I think he's as stunned as I was when I saw them the first time. They're pretty detailed. But I want to talk about the contracts for a minute. In the Safe Board minutes of January 24th, 05, so just recently, there's a discussion about the AOI contract. And Mr. Thurber, your then Vice President of Policy Holder Services, I don't know if that's not his position anymore, but Mr. Thurber stated that, quote, "This is the last year of the AOI contract, and negotiations are underway to reallocate that specific expenditure to other services." So my question to you is that an accurate description of what is happening with the AOI contract? And are you just simply shifting money around to other services with an intent to hold AOI harmless and provide them with the same amount of money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I think what you've read is a fairly accurate summary of where we are. The Board of Directors asked SAFE staff to take a look at the AOI contract during its final year. It does expire at the end of this year, so that part is accurate, to actually try to sit down with AOI. And again, it's a contract, so we have a valid contract with AOI, and it's really their willingness to sit down with us to say, can we at least reopen this existing contract and have a discussion about some of the terms of that contract. And so, to their credit, AOI has been willing to sit down with us and have that conversation. And it deals specifically with whether SAFE Corporation going forward under the terms of the current contract would pay for the Business Viewpoint magazine, or whether there would be some other services in the loss control area and along those lines that we may be willing to put together some sort of a program to provide those type of services to those businesses. And whether it may even be more. I mean, what we're trying to do is actually put together, work with AOI to actually put together essentially a business case on other types of services that are similar to what we have in other group contracts, and actually work on a strategy that would say, here's what it would cost to do that, and we then would agree to those particular terms and amend the contract. Exactly what the dollar figure would be, we're not there. We're still having those conversations.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Rocklin. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I just want to follow up on that a little bit. And it would occur to me that in 2003, say, just pick a year, you were getting a certain bang for your buck, okay, under that contract. And in 2006, since the contract expires this year, whatever is negotiated is going to get you a certain bang for your buck. And it may be very different, but are you where maybe in 2003 you couldn't make a business case? I don't know, because we didn't know about this stuff. It wasn't, you know, publicly discussed. Is that discussion, do you want to elucidate us a little bit more on the change between, say, 2002 or 2003 or whenever, and what you see as potential? I mean, I think there's the concern. I think the concern's legitimate, and so I just want a little more elucidation here.
Well, Mr. Chair, in 2003, I mean, I think even today, I'm not certain that you can't make a business case on the Business Viewpoint magazine. I think I'm not saying that when the contract was entered into, there was anything inappropriate with that, or that you couldn't make a business case for it. I think what the Board of Directors has concluded, though, is because there is that particular magazine has a lot of political viewpoint in it, should SAFE Corporation really be paying for, we don't pay for the entire cost of the magazine, but should we be paying as much as we are for that particular magazine, or would it be more appropriate to simply buy ads in the magazine when SAFE Corporation feels it's appropriate to do so, and then entering into a more more traditional, I guess, group type of contract with AOI. So I don't think there was anything wrong when AOI and SAFE entered into the contract. I just think the board has looked at that in just kind of a different way now, and has basically said, look, if AOI is willing to sit down at the table and talk about that, maybe we could even change that in 2005 instead of waiting until 2006.
Thank you for that. All agencies around here are expected to really be careful about a competitive bidding process, and so the question I have is, have you got the best bang for your buck in the past? And I mean, how long has it been since those services that you get under this contract, how long has it been since it's been analyzed from the perspective of we get this, this, and this for these number of dollars? We demand other agencies to go out and look, and I know you're semi-independent, and see if there's any way you can get this, 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 plus this and this for those dollars.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I'm just pushing that envelope because I think it's our responsibility to push these questions.
Mr. Chair, and that's a very good point, and that's exactly what I think we need to do. We talked a while ago about having somebody from the outside, an auditor, actually take a look at really all of our group contracts to answer that very question. Are we really, from both a financial and a performance aspect, getting the value that we should be getting with those contracts? And so that really will be the point of having an outside auditor come in and take a look at whether it makes sense to have that work done outside, and are we, is it really cost effective to have that particular contract? So that would be the expectation I would have from an outside auditor to take a look at those contracts.
Senator Berger.
I'd like to follow up on that, Mr. Chair. I think you have a very good point, and I have to tell you, as a safe employer, I would want to know if you have competitive bidding. Is AOI the only game in town? Or are you looking at other ways of getting those services at the most efficient way and at the least expense? So I have to agree with you.
Okay.
Senator George.
Brenda, I want to take off on a little bit other side of that issue of, you know, whoever has the gold has the control, that concept. And I'm always worried about when, as I've looked at publications over the years, and I thought, I wonder what kind of influence backs this up. I wonder why they didn't do this and they did that, you know, that sort of thing. Well, and of course, editorial license is pretty well unlimited. But I really get concerned when you have a state agency who, in fact, may be executing some editorial oversight. I'm going to give you an example. We've been hearing Senate Bills 21 and 22. We actually have them on the floor. One of the things that I asked the Treasurer's office is it possible to execute with this portfolio of investment political correctness on whoever I decide and whatever political correctness is to me? Well, yeah, to a certain extent, that's possible, all right. What assurance do we have that undue influence will not be directed? Now, maybe the question is, what is due influence? But I mean, are we willing to just wash our hands off and then say, oh, all we're doing here is purchasing ads? Or is there going to be direction expressed for the editorial direction of a paper?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator George, let me see if I understand this. I don't think we would be controlling editorial direction at all. For if you're talking about business viewpoint, we wouldn't be controlling that. I mean, we would simply make a decision on whether we put an ad, and it would be our own ad copy in that publication, just like we may decide to run an ad in the Oregonian or the Statesman Journal or Eugene Register Guard. So I don't see it as any different than that. We would not have any control on the content of the publication.
Mr. Chairman, a few years ago when I was doing a lot of investigation of ODOT, I had one radio station that was very cooperative. They had a lot of people that were doing a similar thing. We noticed within a matter of about 4 months, substantial ads began to be purchased by the Department of Transportation on that channel. And I cannot tell you that there was a chilling effect, but there was the perception that that sure could be there. I think a message was being sent to them. You know, we have a big bunch of cash here. Do I have your assurance that the action of this agency is not of safe, is not going to be to attempt to influence in those kind of ways?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair George, yes, you have my assurance. I don't think that's how you run an advertising campaign. I mean, I think you make a decision on what's the most cost-effective and persuasive way. I think whether it's a product or a company, whatever you're going to advertise, I think you have a long-term strategy that you then follow. And so I wouldn't advertise in that way.
There's one following comment.
Go ahead.
So the emphasis, or I guess this is going to be a question. So the emphasis is going to be on selling insurance and not selling safe or selling an agenda.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair George, I think the emphasis is on two things. One, I think it's on selling insurance, but two, I think it's also because this is a public company owned by the people of Oregon. I think there's also a message there that talks to the people of Oregon about Safe Corporation and what its mission is and what it does. And so I do see a two-part message there, not a political message, but a two-part message to really talk to Oregonians about Safe Corporation and what it does.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let me... I didn't think you were serious about having me up here for 2 hours, but I think you were. And happy to do it. Let me turn to a couple other things, too, because I want to get to the list that you gave me, and I think I've touched on some of the other topics I wanted to talk about. Mr. Chair, on diversity and goals and the cultural competence of safe staff, let me just say a couple things about that. One, I'm not sure I can say much more than I said the last time I was here and much more that I can say about in the report in terms of looking at the diversity of Safe Corporation and recognizing, just as all of you looked at the chart, that we just simply have to do a better job in that area. And that's something that's very important to me. I've communicated that to the Safe upper management that has to be a corporate goal, that has to be something that we work on. Again, it's not something that you fix overnight, so it's got to be a long-term strategy. I've asked Colleen Seelock, who gets it and also values diversity in the workforce, to lead us forward in coming up with a long-term plan to address that, both not just on the recruiting front, but also on the retention of employees at Safe Corporation so that we have a much more diverse workforce. The other thing in terms of cultural competence, I think, you know, again, I think we need to do a better job in that area as well, although I do think we've done a couple things that have been important in that area. We do agricultural seminars now in Spanish, which I think is important to reach out to employers in languages other than English. We're working on putting out an injured worker survey in Spanish for the first time and not just have it again in English. I think that will be important. But again, those are just things that I think we're going to need to work on.
Excuse me. You said you're putting out this survey for the first time, and yet we have had an industry in the Willamette Valley that's used Hispanic folks for a number of years. And we've never done one before. I mean, that's kind of mind-boggling to me.
Mr. Chair, we've certainly done injured worker surveys, and I think we've probably talked to you about that in prior legislative sessions, but I don't believe we've ever done one in Spanish.
Well, the reason I ask is because I begin to ask myself, all right, how much do they know about Hispanic workers and their cultural attitudes toward Anglo medical practices, you know? Maybe they aren't as into allopathic medicine as we are. Maybe they haven't. Maybe they just like to do something more natural and get back to work as soon as possible. Am I making any sense here?
Mr. Gervin?
Go ahead.
You know, one of the things that I find with Hispanic workers is many of them really appreciate chiropractic care.
Is that
and
right?
They do use a lot of their belief system and a lot of herbal medicine, medication, stuff like that.
Well,
so I'm just kind of curious about your question.
What I was going to ask, you see, was if there had been this same kind of questionnaire in Spanish years ago, what did that teach your staff in terms of cultural competence, you know, to prepare them to move on into the future? These are questions maybe you can't answer all of them today, but I'm not going to let this slip off my list.
No, I hear what you're saying, and I'm committed to work on those issues. And we obviously need to do some work there. No question about that.
It's interesting to me. I find people over the internet or on our various methods of getting our hearings out. They react, and so if there's people out there that are listening in and so on, maybe they'll bring some anecdotal stuff to us, and maybe that'll help this process along as well. I get sensitized to it, not just with Hispanics, but some years ago we sponsored some refugees, both from the Ukraine and Georgia, and they got jobs relatively quickly. They were welders. They had a lot of gifts and abilities, and they did a lot of heavy labor. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine somewhere in your caseload, those people have shown up. But that's a different culture again. And so the cultural competency of interacting with a whole new post-USSR immigration flood that occurred in the late 80s and early 90s. Well, it actually went through 95, 96, pretty strong stream. We had huge numbers of school children moving into the Portland School District, and just schools in my district, and we weren't ready for them. How did we respond? How did SAFE respond, to that new demographic, in terms of providing them culturally competent service? I'm sure some of them got injured too, in our huge workforce. So it's all stuff that I'd like to have more information on. Any other questions here?
I think the one... Mr. Chair, the one topic I haven't addressed that Senator Walker raised, and I hate to end the day on my salary, but I don't want to not address that. So I think the only other thing on my list was executive salaries and board oversight of the SAFE's president in that regard, which is addressed on page 4. So, Senator Walker, happy to answer any questions you may have on that if the chair wants to end there.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, might I ask a few questions?
Yes, I'll let you ask a few questions. Go ahead.
Thank you. Ms. Rockland, what was of concern to me was, SAFE salary, executive salaries are high. You're members of PERS. Catherine Keene was making a six-figure salary. I assume you're making a similar salary. And she costs the state a lot of money in her management style. But I was concerned how executive salaries are determined, certainly in the marketplace, in the private marketplace, whether they're competitive. But SAFE's a state agency. So, you got to look at it that SAFE is a state agency, not a private company that has the luxury of paying its employees a lot of money. I mean, certainly we're employed by a state agency, and our salary of $1,283 a month isn't what you'd pay someone who does our kind of work in the private sector. But when Cecil Tibbetts...
Maybe we could contract the legislature.
When Cecil Tibbetts was appointed acting president, and then when you took over his job, he was placed in another position, and I wasn't aware that his salary had been changed, yet his responsibilities certainly had. So that's my question to you is, how are the salaries determined? And who's minding the store when people get reassigned to different executive positions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, let me respond to a couple things there. One, we can argue about the size of my salary, but let me just assure you I'm not being paid what Kathy Keene was being paid.
Okay.
Secondly, when Cecil Tibbetts went from being the acting president of SAFE Corporation back to being a vice president, his salary was reduced significantly because I reduced it. So I know that happened.
All right.
I had a conversation with him and took action and did that. So he didn't remain at the same salary. And third, in terms of how the salaries are set, I do think, safe in the past, the executive level employees at Safe Corporation are not being paid what they would be if they were in the private sector. They clearly are not, and that's not just the president, but the vice presidents as well. And I think what SAFE has tried to do in the past is really take a look at the private sector, recognizing that because SAFE is a public agency, they couldn't pay at that level, so they've taken a look at, I think, public companies, not-for-profit companies, and then the private sector insurance companies, and they've come up in the past with a formula that I set out in the report that talks about maybe a reasonable way of getting to a salary that's reasonable with a public company, even though it doesn't approach I think what employees would get in the private sector. What I'll tell you about that, though, is that I want to take a new look at that and determine whether the approach SAFE has taken in the past is I think the best way of taking a look at this. And so we have asked, again, an outside company to actually issue a report, and I actually expect to get that in March, on whether the way we're trying to figure out compensation for not just executive level but for all employees is the most appropriate way of taking a look at compensation. So happy to come back and talk to you after we get that report, but I am having an outside company take a look at that very issue.
Well, I'm impressed with that answer. And, you know, in terms of your executive salaries, I would say that the Department of Justice lawyers that we have could make far more money in the private sector than they do working for the Department of Justice, because we are a public agency. We're a public government, and we shouldn't be paid salaries that are what you get in the private sector. But on the other hand, we shouldn't be, I think I heard the word chintzy today somewhere in committee. We shouldn't be thought of as paying these people chintzy salaries, because we need to pay a living wage and respect them for the work that they do. But I appreciate the report, and I'm pleased to see that when it comes in.
I'm going to pull us to a close here. Brenda, I know that we must look like we're just moving with all glacial speed, but this is helping some of us that have been involved a long time and others who've spent less time looking at this. We have a lot of questions. We're going to continue to learn and educate ourselves, and we're going to continue to work on 310, and we're going to look at a lot of other bills. I mean, that's why we introduced them. So thank you for the help today. Please respond. I'm sure that you've got staff that have been taking notes for questions, and try to come back to us with some of the questions that we've not yet had answers for today. Are there any other questions before we depart? If not, I'm going to close the Senate Committee on General Business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.